Rainmaker FM. You're listening to The Digital Entrepreneur, the show for folks who want to discover smarter ways to create and sell profitable digital goods and services. This podcast is a production of Digital Commerce Institute, the place to be for digital entrepreneurs. For more information, go to rainmaker.fm/digital commerce. That's rainmaker.fm/digital commerce.
Welcome to The Digital Entrepreneur. I'm your host, Sean Jackson. And I'm joined, as always, by the sickly Katie Katz, who is fighting a cold, but yet is still with us on the show. Katie, how are you feeling, my dear?
Yes, special thanks to my five-year-old son for bringing germs home from school.
Well, Katie, you know, this is our last show for the year, and it's a great way for us to recap all of the things that have transpired in 2017 and make predictions for 2018. So I'm really excited about today's topic. What about you?
I am too. And speaking of that, I'm curious, Sean, what were the best shows of this year?
Well, that's, you know, I think every show was the best show, by the way. Every show is the best show. But the audience has really placed their vote. And looking in at all the data that we have, there really were three shows that stood out this year. The first show that stood out was with Brian Eisenberg talking about using Amazon as a way to generate leads for your service business, for your digital goods business. And he really provided a lot of interesting insight about how to use content marketing within Amazon as a lead generator to your online business. And that was pretty interesting.
Absolutely.
The second show was with Brett Tavke from PubCon and talking about emerging trends of 2017. He really wanted to share his thoughts about what he has seen in the marketplace, including AR and VR, which are, Katie?
Emerging trends.
Augmented reality and virtual reality. That's what I meant.
Oh, you were looking for the definition.
Virtual reality and augmented reality and how that's really changing the way that certain brands, especially in the retail space and the travel space, are interacting with their audience through these very immersive technologies. And the third show that did extremely well, which I personally was very proud of, because it's right in my wheelhouse of finance and technology, is a show we did about how to price membership systems online. That show did extremely well, primarily talking about the framework for how you can create up a membership site or any site where you're selling some sort of digital good and how to price it and what those price points mean, how to understand what is the profit from them. It was a very almost immersive show for me because I got to talk about something I know about, but apparently lots of people have the same question that many others have, which is, how do I price my membership site? How do I sell digital goods online and make a profit doing it? So those were the three shows that did well, Katie.
Awesome.
Well, I'm glad you think they're awesome, because when we get back, we have more awesome things to cover. Specifically, Katie and I are going to discuss big things that have happened in 2017 and how they can impact your business, and more importantly, big trends for 2018 that will help you moving forward. And when we get back from this short break, Katie and I will spend a fair amount of time going in depth on the biggest things that will impact you for the future. So stay tuned.
Hey, my name is Brian Gardner, and I am the creator of StudioPress, the first premium marketplace for WordPress themes. When I created StudioPress, I could never imagine that more than 200,000 WordPress site owners would use StudioPress to build some of the most elegant and inspiring WordPress sites on the web. And I am not just talking about the numerous large companies that use it. Tens of thousands of food bloggers, podcasters, affiliate marketers, real estate agents, photographers, and many more have created some of the most compelling mobile responsive websites using StudioPress. But that is not all. To make it easy for you to create a compelling WordPress site, we have introduced StudioPress Sites, a turnkey, simple method to create and grow your WordPress site. StudioPress Sites includes many of our most popular WordPress themes, with unique SEO tools and plugins all integrated on our high-performance, secure, and actively managed hosting infrastructure. So when you are ready to take your WordPress site to a new level without the worry or hassle of less robust solutions, then I hope you will visit StudioPress.com. Over 200,000 bloggers and webmasters trust StudioPress for their WordPress site, and we work hard every day to earn it.
Welcome back from the break. And Katie, now that you are rehydrated, are you ready to talk to us?
I am, and I don't have to do any introductions today.
It's my turn. Katie Katz is awesome. That's my introduction. Okay. So Katie, 2017, big year like all years with new innovations, new things coming out. So now the spotlight is on you. Tell me, Katie, what were the three biggest things that occurred in 2017 that would directly impact our audience when it came to their marketing effort?
All right, drum roll. So for me, number one was the concept that for mobile first, if you haven't been thinking about it already and utilizing those tactics, that you're already late and way behind the curve. That was a huge message spread across the digital stratosphere in 2017. We get the message from Google is pushing towards the importance of mobile, as well as from a designer usability aspect. What are your thoughts on mobile first, John?
So I want to, well, that's a great point. And I think mobile first is absolutely a different mindset than a mobile responsive site. And let me explain. Mm-hmm. Mobile responsive was a big design trend several years ago where we could take a desktop design and allow it to respond to the viewing device so that it looked just as well on a mobile phone as it did on your desktop. But a mobile first approach is fundamentally different. Right, Katie? Because
you're
thinking about the mobile experience first before you even think about the desktop. And that was a big change, I think, in the way that we looked at web design overall, is to really think about that mobile experience first more than anything else. So you're 100% right on that one.
Yeah.
Could not agree more. All right.
And the big thing, I think, with that is that while trends for mobile are going up across the industry, it does vary by what your specialty is. It's certainly more in B2C than B2B, but it is going up everywhere. And when you design for a mobile design first, before thinking about desktop, you create a cleaner design. It's easier to use. It's more straight to the point, which actually helps your desktop design in the end as well.
And there's also additional features you can put in there. There may be a different way that you want to organize information for people on a mobile first experience versus a responsive experience. So you're mm-hmm. right. It's a different focus, different thinking process, and it varies by industry because, you know, in certain businesses, their mobile numbers are, you know, in the 30%, let's say, where in others, you know, they're in the 70%. So you have to look for it. But at the end of the day, mobile is only going to get bigger, not less.
Yes.
Okay. What's your second big trend of 2017 that got your attention?
My second was chatbots, which were buzzworthy at the beginning of the year. And I don't know about you, but it seemed like bigger brands were paying more attention to it than smaller local brands. However, as the year went on, I saw more and more small brands think about how they could take advantage of it. Even I checked into a boutique hotel, and they had a chatbot running the concierge service. So the second I checked in, I got a little text message saying, "Hey, this is your friendly concierge. I can help you with anything." And it truly was a smooth, seamless experience.
Yeah. And I think there's two sides of this equation. I think it can be a little confusing for people. When we think about chatbots, we are thinking of an automated response, right, that comes to you based on certain events that you interact with, right? So if I check in, there's a response to that. Those are event-driven ideas that you get a response to. But there's actually two aspects of chatbots. There's the pre-programmed responses, if you will, which is what I think a lot of people are doing right now. In other words, if you ask about A, it will tell you information about A, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But you have to go put in the information. So the chatbot experience right now is a lot of thinking about the customer, thinking of the questions they will ask, coming back with the automated responses that you discerned from looking at those type of queries that they're going to be sending to you via chat messaging, whatever the platform is, right? Whether you're going to a website, a little chat box come up, doesn't matter. The second aspect that we're not there yet on, but I think this is where everyone's, I think, most excited about it, is this idea that if I don't want to have to create up the canned responses to send to people, right? I would like a system that just figured it out for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what is on the forefront right now of a lot of big companies like Amazon, like Google, is to look at information and say, if you're talking about a Jaguar, that must mean that it is a car versus the animal, because I know the context and I know the pre-canned responses that I can pull from other sources to reply back to you. So that intelligent information is what I like to call it, the intelligent information out there. We're not there yet when it comes to chatbots. You still have to figure out what those event triggers are, and you still have to figure out the canned responses.
Yep.
But within a few years, you will basically say, here is all of my content. And when people come in and ask any question, here is a way to respond to that. How to, where do I go, what do I do, without me having to spend a whole bunch of time pre-programming those responses in.
Absolutely.
So what's your third big one?
My number three is live streaming technology. Mm. I think Facebook made a big push for it this year, especially trying to keep their users within the platform for video, take them out of YouTube and push them towards Facebook. And most social platforms now have their own version of some sort of go live. But a lot of brands have really been jumping in on that. I know Birchbox does a great job, and many more have really thought about innovative ways to connect with their consumers on a live interactive basis. So I think that was really huge for 2017, is going to continue to influence in the coming year.
Yeah, and also when it comes to YouTube, right? Because there's certainly some signals out there that YouTube Live type of presentations actually get a ranking boost because of it, right? I know that mm-hmm. we've talked about internally about the idea we should do more YouTube Live video because of the ranking factors that it does provide. And you're absolutely right. Video, live streaming especially, is gained in huge popularity, especially when you think about things like Twitter, right? You know, Twitter has the ability to put videos out there. Facebook, obviously, a big powerhouse in that movement. And because so many people are consuming them on mobile devices, it's just a better way to engage with people in real time versus just some sort of text stream coming across. And, you know, quite frankly, my 13-year-old daughter seems to be doing great with video, whereas her 50-year-old dad still having a little problems producing it out there for consumption. So given the fact that youth are doing it, I think from now on, video, especially live streaming for events, live streaming lifestyle things, live streaming for whatever, is going to be something that we're all going to have to deal with. And certainly 2017 was a big part of it.
Yep.
All righty, Katie, you ready for my list?
I am. I'm excited.
Okay. So for 2017, I think the three biggest trends were this. Number one, and you actually spoke about this at your presentation at State of Search, the death of social media and the rise of paid placement. And I don't mean social media is dead by any stretch, but what I think we have really come to realize now as online marketers is that paid social media is where we need to play. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, Facebook has done huge amounts to discourage the organic reach that we used to achieve through that platform. Certainly more and more people are saying that it's too hard to organically acquire that social media traffic. We're just going to pay for it. I was talking to someone here in Dallas just the other day that owns a shoe line, and Instagram is huge for them. I mean, the Instagram drives a ton of business for them. So, and how do they get that Instagram traffic? They pay for it. Right?
Yep.
So what do you think? I know you've spoken about this, so you have a certain amount of expertise. Is paid social media now just taking over versus organic social media from the past?
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, we're finding that we encourage our clients to even boost every single post that we post to social, even if it's just a couple bucks, so that their audience is seeing what we're posting. And just as you said, it doesn't mean that an organic goes away. It just gives it that little nudge, so that, because every time you pay to play, you get all of the organic benefits from it as well. And Facebook is very aware of their power and influence in getting brands to pay for those placements. They know that we know our customers are there. And so I don't know about you, but I get practically bullied from Facebook with emails. Hey, do you want to talk to our customer success team on how to get more ads?
Right.
So it's going to keep going. And that's definitely something that if businesses aren't thinking about it, and weren't thinking about it in 2017, they really need to continue to pay attention to.
Yeah, I think when it comes to the social media channels, you're really going to have to put some sort of budget together for paid media, whether, as you suggested, for amplification of existing content marketing efforts or just good old-fashioned direct buy now buttons, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the beauty is, and I talked to Sean Dolan on one of our episodes from Pushfire about the fact that you really don't need a huge amount of money to start testing things out. Like, to your point, you know, for just to throw a couple extra bucks at it. I think you really need to define a $500 or $1,000 budget, which I know is a lot, but that's what credit cards are for. But you really have to put together a simplified budget, constrain yourself, limit yourself to a certain spend, because it's going to force you to really understand some of the nuances about getting responsiveness and realize that this is the way that we're going to have to play with social media now. They're not going to let us get away with the good old fashioned, get 200,000 people to like my page and, you know, hopefully a percentage will buy.
Absolutely.
All right. You ready for my second?
Go for it.
So we knew about this in 2016, but gosh, did we talk a lot about it in 2017? And that's Google AMP, Accelerated Mobile Pages. Gosh, how many conferences have we been to where everyone is either hating or loving Google AMP, right?
Absolutely.
I know. I mean, and it's a, and it, what it means for the average person is this, is that if you have a website, Google would like you to change the code on that site so that it will render inside of a search result much, much faster than your current site load. And all the studies have shown that Google AMP sites load tremendously fast. I mean, lightning fast. And there's a lot of technology reasons behind that. But at the same token, the benefit that they are offering, i.e. at the top of a search result and some sort of little card, first off, has not really been true for a lot of industries. I mean, we know a couple industries, right, Katie? But I mean, have you seen anyone that's like a B2B marketer with an AMP site that is killing it, you know, in that little box at the top?
No, I mean, it seems absolutely it's very effective for news and news type content. And if you have a business that has some sort of component where you are distributing information in that way to your audience, I think there's benefit there. And there are, you know, talking about the cards can lead us down a whole other conversation. But as it comes to AMP, it's definitely one of those things that I think you have to really assess what your space is to make a decision.
Yeah, and that's the tough part, because I think so many people hear that, oh, get better placement on Google using Google AMP, and then they get into it and realize, holy cow, this is a lot of effort, a lot of work. And of course, what is the payoff? I mean, there is studies out there from our friend Eric Inga that, you know, talks about how those pages actually will draw more traffic in, right? I mean, it's just, but, you know, what is the pain? What is the effort? But again, Google is not giving up on this. I know Eric over at Stone Temple is moving their site into a WordPress backend with a AMP front end. The guy who's running AMP for Google actually has a WordPress site that is no HTML, all Google AMP on the front of it. So the simple fact is that this year, 2017, we talked a lot about it, and it's not going away. It is one of those trends that's going to be around for quite some time. Okay, Katie, you ready for my third trend of 2017?
Can't wait.
All right. This is what I think is mind-blowing, especially given someone like me who's been around technology since the 1990s. It used to be that having a technology tool in marketing was a rarity. Right. I mean, you usually had to build your own. Right. I mean, and if you saw them for purchase, they weren't very sophisticated. But I'm going to say now, the biggest trend of 2017 to pay attention to is the fact that any marketing problem you have online, someone has built a tool for that. I mean, the number of marketing and advertising tools available to consumers and businesses is astronomical. And we've known this for years. I mean, we've seen the rise of the MarTech space, but I am almost blown away on a daily basis that I'll come up with an idea. Well, I need a tool that can do this, or I need a tool that can do that. And a simple search reveals not one option or two options, but 20 options in the space and entire review sites around it. So I think a big trend that has really benefited the online marketing community is the fact that we have more tools than ever for any task or strategy that we want to implement. And the cost basis in them have plummeted. Things that I would look at and go, gosh, I can't believe, you know, that that's available. It must cost a fortune. And it's $19.95 a month, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or free, or whatever they come across with. That, to me, I think is a huge trend of 2017. It's just the proliferation across every aspect of MarTech for some tool or technology that you can get online to pursue whatever strategy you have. But here's,
I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Here's the catch with it, though, okay? And I know you use a lot of them, right, Katie?
Of course.
Yeah, of course. But here's the catch. So many of these companies will also go out of business. And if you're using a cloud-based solution from a small startup company, there is a possibility that they will either go out of business due to lack of funding, go out of business because somebody bought them and no longer wants to provide that tool, or they may not be able to put any resources towards continued development. So I think this trend of the proliferation of tools out there also comes with some giant warning signs, because if you are reliant upon them and they go away, what do you do? That's my thinking. What do you say?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting point. There is definitely a ton of money in Silicon Valley towards this SaaS space. And as someone who's played in the SaaS space quite a bit, I know that there are tons of newly funded tools out there that are looking to get a piece of the pie, and tons of smart thinkers who have, like you said, Sean, a problem that they want a solution for, and they're looking for that mailbox money, something easy where, hey, if I come up with a tool that doesn't take a lot of hands-on work, I can get a whole bunch of subscribers and just sit at home watching Netflix all day while I make a whole bunch of money. And so I think all of those things definitely had contributed to this growth. And I've actually, there's a whole business around making products that are, like you said, sort of newer, newly funded, legitimized online, mm-hmm. and looking like to be a bigger, more established company to attract more customers who are risk averse. Yeah. And so I think it's something to definitely watch out for. But at the same time, as easy as it is to load your information in and use that tool, there's not a lot of them out there that I think are that sticky, that are like, you've loaded so much in there that you're going to be in big trouble if right. it disappears.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a double-edged sword to them. But the simple fact is, if you are struggling to achieve something, trust me, a tool is out there, and 2017 mm-hmm. saw a ton of them. All right, we're done with 2017, Katie. I need you to put on your Swami hat to look towards the future for us and tell us what you're excited about and trends for 2018.
All right, I'm going to go from most obvious to I think edgiest.
Okay.
So number one is voice search. I can't create a list for 2018 without including it, because if anybody was alive during Black Friday, they were hit somehow with an ad from Amazon telling them to buy an Alexa. And boy, did people go out and buy Alexa. So Amazon and Google and all of the other big players are getting us ready for those voice-enabled devices, and they want us to start using them, and people are very interested.
Yeah, no question. And I'm kind of mad that you took that off my list, by the way, because I was totally on board with that. And we had a great show this year, again, with Eric Inga from Stone Temple, and talked a lot about voice search. And certainly that is something that, as professional marketers, everyone is looking towards. It has its own challenges, to be certain. But the simple fact is, Google and Amazon have devices out there. Apple is about to release a new device out there. If you are not yelling at something in your home to do something, not being your kids or your spouse, then you are going to be missing out on opportunities, because that's what's happening. People are constantly talking to these devices, and it's not just in the home. They're going after the workplace. Your car right now, I think one of the biggest selling features of Tesla is that you can talk to your car, right?
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's only going to increase, more and more car manufacturers. So I think you're going to see, to your point, that permeation of the voice search, and it has its own rules for success that really transcend a lot of the tactical things we've done over the years, but using a lot of the same techniques.
Yes, and I think, as for marketers and business owners, it would be important to purchase one or two of these devices and play around with them now and start thinking about how consumers are using them, so that you can think as a marketer about how to best optimize. My feeling on it is that a overall brand strategy is going to be more important than ever. Things like what Tony Wright was talking about a couple episodes ago, of monitoring your brand across the web and making sure that it's clean, are going to be ever more important. When you think about how someone says, "Hey, Alexa, tell me about a pizza place near me that has good reviews." That's how people are going to ask questions, and that's how they're going to think about things. Mm-hmm. And so if you're that pizza place, you want to be on the top of the list.
Right. And I think there's another element to this as well, which is what I'm looking forward to getting on Christmas Day, which is the new show device from Amazon. Because here's why I think that's a huge shift. The scientist that invented Siri, actually, who worked with Apple, who was really the brain trust behind that entire concept, has said that voice only is extremely limited, that you must have a screen or some sort of visual device to coincide with that visual. Okay. And I think that's a big opportunity for marketers in 2018, is to look at these devices, specifically the voice only as well as the voice plus screen, and put a lot of emphasis on that visual component. Because I believe that as voice matures, the visual component, the ability to ask a question, where are the best Chinese restaurants near me, let's say, and seeing a list of them on the screen is going to be important. And how we get into that placement is going to be really important.
Yep.
You know,
that whole interactive experience of voice and touch and visual. Absolutely.
All right. I'll give you that one, Katie. I think that's a big one. All right. What's your second one?
My second one is something that's been around for a while, but as I alluded to in 2017, I think is going to be more important than ever, and is actually continuing on what you were just saying. And that's video. Think about it with your content. It should be a social media strategy for you. It should be a website strategy. As you said, this combination of sound and sight and interactive, immersive experiences are things that our users and customers are coming to expect from us. And so it's time to start thinking about ways to create quality video content.
No question. I think to this end, though, there's a couple of things to look for as far as frameworks. You know, obviously, we are very familiar with all of the extremely successful people on YouTube, the YouTube personalities, right? The tubers out there, like Liza, right, which is, my kids absolutely love her. You know, those personality types, you know, that takes a lot of work. I mean, she actually works extremely hard to do well on her show. And you'll see a lot of these personality-driven videos. And you may be thinking, well, is that what she means? I think that's one framework. And if you have the personality pull it off, that's great. But the second framework is the fact that video is, in many ways, nothing more than moving pictures and sound, right? And
yep.
In a mobile world, sound is an option. right? I mean, you don't always have the sound turned on for a video that you're playing. So the other element of video is taking some of your old content and putting some animated effects to that content to tell a nice visual story within the confines of a mobile landscape. That, to me, I think is also a good way for people who may not be comfortable with the on-screen personality aspects of video to repurpose or to create new content that is very visual with motion tied to it. I think a great company that does that is Business Insider. They do a lot of experiments with video, and not all their videos are talking heads. A lot of their videos are just motion graphics with words explaining a story. What do you think?
Absolutely. I think infographics had a day in the sun, a few years ago, and everybody was sort of on this bandwagon of link building with infographics. And then they kind of faded off. It was one of those marketers, kind of like what I was talking about, state of search. Marketers find something they love and then they beat it into the ground until there's nothing left to do with it. But something like that would be perfect for video to bounce around and see that information in a visual, exciting way. That'd be one way to bring those back and make them engaging and interesting.
Absolutely. And the best part is you don't need to be a extroverted personality to succeed at it, right? You can literally be someone who hires a motion graphic artist to take elements that you have now, put them together, and tell a story. Because at the end of the day, there's where video succeeds, is when it's telling you a story in a visual medium.
Yep.
All righty. What's your third trend for 2018?
All right. The third one that I cannot read and listen to enough about is AI and machine learning. And for those who don't know, machine learning is essentially where the robot, the tool itself, is given the set up the basics to continue learning for itself, like very futuristic. But there's some incredible things that are happening with machine learning in all spaces. Particularly scary spaces are health and medicine, where I've seen some really cool studies. There was a psychologist who did a study on depression and set up a machine learning algorithm based off of Facebook behavior. And this algorithm could detect with a very small margin of error whether someone was going to be clinically diagnosed with depression based on their Facebook behavior before they were even exhibiting symptoms that a psychologist would recognize.
Yeah, that is scary. That is very scary. Because God knows, as marketers, we're going to apply it in some way to get people to buy more from us, right, Katie?
Exactly. Where I was going, you read my mind, John.
Just your show notes. Yeah, I think this is a big movement. And when we're talking about chatbots earlier and about, you know, intelligent information, I mean, that the machine learning aspects is where that intelligent information is going to come from, right? Because they are going to be looking at large data sets, and they're going to be able to not only analyze those data sets, but also work very well to improve their predictions from those data sets. And that's a big thing, because really what we're talking about on this, you know, this AI universe is I want something that can make itself smarter over time. And today I can go after a big set of data, and if I have the right input mechanisms, I can make certain predictions based on what I said was an input. But now what happens when inputs are all over the place and they're digging through and finding those similarities and then constantly working to improve that initial hypothesis so that they can make better predictions in the future, and doing this all on a computer running 24 hours a day that does nothing but figure out how to make itself smarter? This is scary stuff, and you are 100% right on it.
Scary and exciting, and definitely an opportunity to watch in 2018.
Right. And I think where you watch it is going to be in a couple of places. First off, I think you're going to see ad programs get a lot smarter, right? I think you're going to be able to build a profile of someone, and then it's going to do all the heavy lifting of trying to find the right target audience for you and get the message right in there. I think you're going to see it when it makes recommendations on how to improve your ads, right? By actually redoing your ads for you. right? I think you're going to see a lot of that. Because at the end of the day, these are to facilitate the ability for these big brands like Google, like Facebook, to monetize money from you by improving your ad spend and increasing that ad spend. And what better way to do it than having a artificial intelligence constantly looking at your ad program and figuring out ways to optimize it and maybe even rewrite it or maybe create up a brand new one for you that you even never thought about. That's where you start to see it.
Yeah, customer success for these big brands will be huge.
Yeah, and I think once they start to pioneer that work, then you're going to start to see it on the site level too, that you'll start to see where you can buy a program that will help you change the site design you have based on the type of people coming to it on the fly, this extreme personalization, right? Where you don't even have to think about it. You just have to put the content together and think about a website that dynamically adapts to the person interacting with it. So forget mobile responsive, mobile first, or mobile anything. The site will all of a sudden just to start to realize, oh, you're Bob from, you know, Sherman, Texas, and you like tractors and you're 49 years old and you have three children. And based on this, I know that you like to look at pink ribbons. You'll be like, what? You know? But it will match and the site will adapt accordingly versus showing them something that is outside of the scope of it. And that type of intelligence is going to really change marketing. And that is certainly a trend we're starting to see in 2018 and will be powering us for years to come.
100%. Personalization on steroids.
Yes, exactly. Across the board, whether you're buying or selling, it's going to be there.
Yep.
All right. You ready for my three for 2018?
I'm ready.
Okay. This is going to sound cliche, but because we always say it in marketing, but rarely do people actually do it, and now they have to. Niche, niche, niche. You have to be niche. Period in discussion. The world is too big now. It is too many people chasing all the big stuff out there. And the opportunity for you to take something that people were doing poorly and maybe making it better, there's about 20,000 other people doing it now. If you are in online marketing, you have to find your little niche and understand it better than anyone else. And the reason I say that is because the tools of mass destruction that we have in front of us, as Katie has already pointed out, between chatbots and, you know, AI and all these things out there, really, really have changed the way that people can enter into any market and sell their goods. I mean, the one thing about all these tools that I mentioned earlier is the fact that marketers are using them. They are literally weapons of mass destruction in the hands of people for pennies a day to make happen. So that still means that you're going to have to do traditional marketing well, but it also puts a huge focus on tiny niches. And I'll give you a good example. We had a show about this year, about hyper-local marketing. And in that space, I still think there's an opportunity. Because how many people, I'm serious, Katie, how many people are writing about your neighborhood there in Houston? I mean, just your neighborhood, not the city, not the general geographic area, but about your little neighborhood, right? That's a niche.
Absolutely.
And someone who can write about that, who can cover it, who can really make a compelling story around there, now becomes not only an authority for your neighborhood, but they also can go to merchants in that neighborhood and monetize those relationships that they have built. So that's what I'm talking about, niche, niche, niche. I mean, really more focused than ever. I mean, if you're talking about, like we at Copyblogger were about content marketing, we could do that because it was back in 2006, right? I mean, nobody was talking about this stuff. Now those days are gone. You're going to have to go find some tiny little sliver of a market and control it because you're the only one there talking about it. That's my big one.
I completely agree. And I think it's across the board when you think about your business, but also thinking about your strategies within that business. So to piggyback off of that, you need to really take your long tail keywords, even more long tail. Look at those low hanging fruit with low competition. And the same thing with social media, where Instagram just announced this week that users can follow hashtags in the same way that they can follow people. Mm-hmm. Going after hashtags like hashtag radio are probably not going to be as successful. You definitely need to find those niche hashtags, and you'll have a much better chance of showing up within your audience's feed.
Yeah, and of course, you can say it with the flair that you did. So it's either niche or niche. One of the two, it doesn't matter. Go after them. Because regardless of how you pronounce it, the world now is going into tiny little silos, and you need to dominate one. All right, so my second big one. And I say this every year, so I'm probably repeating myself for anyone who's followed me over time. But I do believe that a trend that I start to see more of is this concept of text messaging. Now, I know it's been around forever, just like podcasting was around forever. I mean, this, you know, podcasting is not new. It resurged, but it was not new. So text messaging is a trend for 2018. Here's why. I think people are going to be overtly distracted by all of the ways marketers are trying to get in their face, through social media, through email, through all the traditional means that we've had. Because there's no question that now everyone is advertising more because we don't get the information organically like we used to. It's much more a focus on grabbing your attention and paying to grab your attention and doing anything that they can through those online channels. But to this day, Katie, I will tell you, I think text messaging still remains the number one method to get people's immediate attention on whatever message you have. It's a little bit harder. It takes a little bit more time and money, but it is one way that I know to cut through a lot of clutter, because every time you send out an email, you are fighting for that inbox. Every time you are putting an ad on social media, you are fighting for attention to it. Every time you're putting content out there on a search engine, you're hoping to God that it gets ranked in the right fashion. Text messaging gets you their attention without having to fight to get it. To me, that continues to be a trend that more and more people are starting to understand. So if I keep talking about it enough, maybe over the years, people will get it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right that you have to keep including it in your list, because it's something that people still haven't really taken full advantage of yet, or brands, I should say, haven't taken full advantage of.
Yeah. And so until they do, I'm going to keep on bringing it up. All right. So my third one for this episode is relying on the fact that at the end of the day, all of this stuff in marketing comes down to one thing: money. If somebody ain't buying something from you, then you're really not doing marketing. And to that end, to key off of what you started off the show with, I believe that mobile payments is an absolute trend for 2018 that is continuing on the work from 2016 and 2017, and now will be something that every online merchant, whether you're selling digital goods or physical goods, must be concentrating on. And here's why. The other day, my wife had to pay somebody for a thing going on at our school. The only way she could pay for it was using Vimeo. And then the next day, she had someone who wanted to send her money via Apple Pay from the messaging app on the iPhone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I started to think about that, because here in my little world, my wife is already starting to use financial transactions, not by writing a good old-fashioned check between her friends, but by the exchange of money electronically. And then I started thinking about mobile. And really, how many online merchants have really thought about the mobile purchase experience, especially with iPhone releasing Apple Pay inside of the Messenger app to begin with, right?
How,
I mean, think about it. How many ways are you asking people to pay you on the desktop versus how are you offering that same process on the mobile device? And to me, I think that's a huge trend that will be for 2018, is that more and more of us are going to be looking at our websites, and when it comes to a mobile phone experience, providing a seamless mobile payment method. That, I think, is going to be a challenge, because no one has really, I think, conquered it perfectly yet. I know PayPal has certainly tried over the years, and they have some good options towards it. But in Vimeo, certainly trying to do it, and Square. I mean, a lot of people are chasing this particular feature set. So the good news is you can apply it to your site, but the question is, are you applying it to your site? Are you taking the time to think about not only that mobile-first approach that Katie mentioned, but are my mobile-first transactions there too? Can I allow people to spend money on their phone with me? And I think that's something that more and more brands are taking a look at.
Yeah, and I would say it's going to extend itself even beyond the website to storefront locations. That's absolutely where Apple's going with that. They want you to be able to swipe your Apple Watch over the checkout lane and be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
it's 100%. I couldn't agree more. That absolutely is an important thing to start thinking about and to make that user experience through all of your platforms as seamless as possible.
So Katie, we have our top trends for 2018 defined. We've talked about the important things of 2017. I have one last thing for everyone who's listened this long in this show. You ready? I would like you, the audience listening right now, to go into iTunes and give us a review. I rarely ask for anyone to do anything online when it relates to the show. Rarely. But for our end of year episode, Katie and I would love to get your feedback. So open up iTunes or Google Play. Go in and hit the review button. And tell us honestly what you think about the show. I know that Katie and I really work hard to provide good insight, good information. And the only way we know if we're resonating with you is if you take the moment and go in and give us a solid review. So if you will do that for us today, it's a great way for us to end the year so that we can work on programming for next year. So Katie, that's it for the show today. Any parting thoughts before we let people out for the holidays?
Just really excited to see some of these trends take form and see if we can add Predictor to our job resume, Sean.
Yes, the Swami that I am for the future. That would be on my LinkedIn profile soon. All righty, folks. You have a great holiday season, and Katie and I will be back in 2018. And we can't thank you enough for listening to The Digital Entrepreneur. Take care, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Hey, everyone. This is Sean Jackson, the host of The Digital Entrepreneur. And I want to ask you a simple question. What is your business framework for selling digital goods online? Now, if the question perplexes you, don't worry, you are not alone. Most people don't realize that the most successful digital entrepreneurs have a framework or a general process for creating and selling their digital goods in the online space. And one of the best free resources is Digital Commerce Academy. Digital Commerce Academy combines online learning with case studies and webinars created by people who make a living selling digital goods online. And the best part is that this material is free when you register. Are you interested in joining? Well, I'll make it easy for you. If you're listening to the show on your phone and are in the continental United States, I want you to send a text message to 313131 with the keyword digits. D-I-G-I-T-S. And when you send that text message, we will send you a link to the registration form right to your phone. Are you outside the United States? Don't worry. Just send us an email to digits@rainmaker.fm. Either way, we'll send you a link to the registration form so that you can sign up for free for Digital Commerce Academy. And as a special bonus, we will also subscribe you to our newsletter when you text or email us so that you can stay informed with the latest insights from the show. And don't worry, we respect your privacy and we will not share your email or phone number, and you can easily unsubscribe at any time. So if you want to start building or improving your framework for selling digital goods online, then please send a text to 313131 with the keyword digits, or send us an email at digits@rainmaker.fm. You won't be disappointed.